Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
And gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, November 14th, 2014. Good afternoon, Alfred.
Hello, Melody.
Hey.
Woo-hoo. It's Friday.
It's Friday.
You know what that means?
It's Friday the 14th.
Well, and what did Pogo say? That's right next to Thursday the 13th. And I don't know. He thought it was kind of an unlucky number, even if it was the 14th. But it turns out it wasn't such a bad day for gold or silver.
No, it wasn't. You know, we had a nice little price increase on both gold and silver. And we'll have to see if they're what was the driving force behind it. Did they just hit lows and people are repositioning, covering their shorts? Are we is something happening behind the scenes, or is it a combination of everything? And I think you and myself, Al, we agree that we think it's a combination of everything. But we'll have to see if this continues to rise. But it's also a sign of how quick things can change. And yes, gold is up $28.50 at $11.91. It was down in early morning trade about $15. So, I mean, you're looking at a $45 move in gold. So, you know, things can change very quickly. And something happens this weekend, you certainly could see even higher prices in gold come next week. So the whole point of my little thing here is, you know, it's very difficult to time the markets. If you're in the position to buy gold and silver, you get in and you do it. You don't worry about price. If it goes down a little bit, don't worry, because the end game of this all, gold and silver will end at much higher levels than we're at today. And yes, some of the numbers people throw around, you know, I kind of like to see where we're at before I go higher and higher and higher. But I have no doubt you'll see $3,000 to $5,000 gold, and I think you'll see $50 to $100 silver. But we got a ways to go. But things could turn on a dime.
Well, that's the point, and not only turn on a dime, but turn again, and then turn again after that,
that's
and
right.
Turn some more. The point is, from my perspective, is that we are seeing an almost incredible amount of volatility, both in stocks and in metals, and perhaps other investments like crude oil. The volatility, from my perspective, all by itself signals that we are on the verge of something major happening. And it is unlikely that whatever happens is going to be good for most people. Huh? if they can't stabilize this at some level and just say, okay, we're just going to hold this at this, this is where the price is going to be and it's going to stay there. If they can't stabilize this, it just, for me, it indicates that the system is going to suffer a significant crack, a significant break at some point and perhaps in the near future. The volatility, I don't know what that crack is going to be, but it doesn't matter from my perspective. The volatility alone says, look, protect yourself. There's something strange happening.
The day of reckoning is not that far away. And
Day of reckoning. I don't even know if it's the day of reckoning. We're going to do a lot of reckoning before this is all over.
We certainly are. So, hey, it's up to you listeners to figure out where you want to be. And silver today was up 64 cents at $16.40. Platinum was up 22 at $12.16. Platinum was down 3 at $716. Palladium is down 3. Thank you, Al. Mm-hmm. Palladium was down 3 at 767. Platinum was down 22 at 1216. The USDX today was down 0.24 at 87.52, which really wasn't a big enough drop in order to have any impact. You know, if you're trying to look for the opposite trade of gold, and it wasn't there. Crude oil was up $1.75, big deal. It's down $30-$35 in the past, so I don't think $1.75 to the upside, you know, unless there was something moving it up there other than just paper trading at $75.96. And not to take away that I'm not excited about gold being up, yes, very much so. It was a nice reversal for the day. The Dow was down 18 points at 17,634. The NASDAQ was up 8 at 46.88, and the S&P barely moved at 2,039. 10-year yield, 2.32, down 0.03. So, again, not a lot of action in the paper markets. You're not going to find too many people who make predictions say you could almost sense there's brewing. And certainly we look at the fundamentals. We talk about them every single day. We talk about our economy. We talk about what's wrong and why we're not seeing the things that we should be seeing. And we know all this. You all know this as the listener. But sometimes you do try to find and connect the dots to see if we can pinpoint one particular thing over another. And, it's a combination of everything, Al. There was an article out today. We talk about the condition of this country. There was a report done by the State Budget Solutions. They did a Fox interview with them, and they said America's red ink runs deeper than you think. And we've talked about this before, about having two sets of books so forth. But aside from the nearly $18 trillion national debt, you have a lot of state governments that their budgets are trillions of dollars in the red. Yeah. And they've hidden the numbers by dramatically underreporting that debt. And one of them is the pensions. They're unfunded liabilities or debt states that they will owe down the road. It's found that a number of the states are fudging their numbers, and they're using tricks like assuming their stock investments will soar. The book cooking could mean bad news, of course, for public pensions and other programs that rely on these budgets. And there's reports that these unfunded liabilities of nearly $5 trillion, or $15,000 per American. And a lot of these
states...
I'm talking the state level. Yes.
Yeah. And there's another $18 trillion that they admit with the national level.
Yes.
All right. We're now up to $30,000 per person. Mm-hmm. And then you talk about somebody like John Williams at ShadowStats.com, who says the real national debt is closer to $90 trillion, and the Congressional Budget Office has said, including unfunded liabilities, it's over $200 trillion, which translates into something like $750,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country.
Let me write a check. Anyway, and these states... Of course, they're lowballing the numbers. This report came out and said they found $5 trillion. The states are saying, $2.7 trillion. So what this person of the State Budget Solutions, and I'm going to ask you, Al, who this statement he made should make you think of someone. They're making promises that they can't keep.
Well, let me see. Does this, are you think of someone with a name that starts with the letter O?
No.
Let me get my Ouija board out here and see if we can figure it out. Promises they can't keep.
All right.
Oh, it points to O, Melody.
Illinois was one of the worst offenders, and found that while the state say it has an unfunded liability, this is Illinois, of $8,000 per person, the true amount is three times higher at $25,000 per Illinois resident. So these public pensions assume they're going to make 7 to 8% every year, and
7 to 8% every year.
7 to 8% every year
by investing in the stock market.
They assume, yes. You know what happens when you assume. And so, again, here's another sign that Illinois, the states, other states, have the same problem. Their budgets are not what they say. They have all these unfunded liabilities to the trillions of dollars. So, again, just another sign. And we know California is right behind Illinois. And so many, many other problems.
We've got an article here from the Fiscal Times. The headline is, "Nearly half of us are dangling on the edge of financial ruin." And it says, even as the job market continues to improve, many financial experts recommend that most Americans keep at least 3 to 6 months of expenses stashed away in an emergency savings account. Now, I agree you got to have savings. I'm not sure about emergency savings accounts, given some of the things that may be happening in our banking system in the near future.
That's your mattress.
Yeah, maybe so. Yet that message, despite years of shaky economic times, still hasn't gotten through. Over 40% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. This new report from Springleaf Financial, a consumer finance company. The findings released today apply to people across all education and salary levels. The study discovered that 24% of consumers have less than $250 in their bank accounts on any given payday, leaving them without reserves to handle unexpected costs. Now, what's the significance of all this? Well, a little bit more. People who make more than $200,000 a year, 20% of them said they save rarely, inconsistently, or not at all. One in four consumers with a graduate degree actually couldn't miss a single month of paychecks without having to borrow or sell assets. Point. As a nation, we are largely insolvent or on the verge of insolvency. Just, you know, we're dancing around. 40-50% of us can't make it through the month if our source of income stops for whatever reason. These are the people that, according to the Congressional Budget Office, owe $750,000 apiece on average toward the national debt. And they can't even make it through a month on their own. Now, the point, this is just more evidence that we are so far into debt, so deeply indebted, that the debt can't be paid. And sooner or later, it's going to be apparent that it can't be paid, and they're going to have to admit, gee, we can't make that payment on the pension plan. We can't make that payment on the bonds. We can't make the payment. It's been hidden at the state level, and now it's come up, and we can't make that payment. We are going to, you know, I can't give you prophecy, but I can tell you, you don't need a PhD to look at these numbers and realize that just as it says, and we are virtually hanging on a cliff, dangling on the edge of financial ruin. We may not go into financial ruin, and nobody can say that's going to happen, but we are very, very close. And just a little push could all of a sudden collapse this system in a way that it's just not going to be saved, stopped. And the lesson in this, the implication, is that you must make an extraordinary effort to save as much money as you possibly can at this time in anticipation of a possible financial catastrophe. If you can save enough money, you will at least survive, and you may even be able to prosper through some very difficult financial times, which at least look probable. Are they going to happen? Can't tell you. Don't know. But are they likely? Are they probable? Are we close? It certainly seems so. And we see it at the national level. We see it at the state level. We see it at the individual level. This country is busted. Right? We are like a convention of emperors who are all wearing invisible clothing and waiting, hoping no little kid comes out and says, hey, listen, those people are all naked. But it seems inevitable that someone's going to make that point, and sooner or later we're going to have to admit, holy cow, got a problem here, Melody.
So again, it's just another part of the puzzle, the pieces of the puzzle that certainly shows what's going to happen to gold and silver in the near future. Mm-hmm. You have bank branches that are closing at a drastic pace. This year has been one of the biggest years of bank branches closing. And, you know, the advocates have said that these year-long trend of branch closures, say that these are critical services that provide that are essential to the vibrancy of communities. And when these branches close, it opens the door to, you know, one of the things of predatory lenders, like banks themselves aren't predatory lenders, but we'll just go along with the story anyway. But
they're more like vampires. Predators will actually kill you before they feed on you. The vampire will feed on you and then come back next night and feed again. Keep on going as long as you can. Then the vampires know how to ration. You understand?
But, in Dick Bove, he's a banking analyst. He thinks that, you know, this story is overblown. And he thinks that once the Federal Reserve normalizes interest rate policies and the yield curve and the spread between bonds of various durations start to expand, that you'll see these branches begin to reopen. And what I found interesting that he said is, again, we're on fractional reserve banking right now. So you would think they want these deposits, correct?
You'd think so.
But he's talking about that when you have the lower curve, that you don't want to attract deposits. So you close branches.
That's brilliant.
You close branches.
This is just another example of the kind of surreal world that we're living in. We have a man who studies banking who says banks don't want deposits. Right? Does that make any sense to anyone? And it may be that there's reason and logic behind this, but it cannot be the reason and logic of a rational world. It's the reason and logic of a world that has become unstable, bizarre, surreal, illogical, irrational. And all of that, again, I look at that and I say, I don't know what's going to happen, but it looks to me like something big may be in the immediate horizon.
I mean, you could even rationalize, because you have the online banking and so forth, that, you know, it would put pressure on some of these branches out in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, they'll close them just like a lot of your postal services, you know, and so forth. They close those really tiny branches and so forth. But
they talk about it.
Yes, but so you could rationalize it that, but to actually say you don't want to attract deposits, you close these branches to keep deposits from coming in, it really doesn't make much sense. You had Bank of America, they have been the most aggressive in closing offices, shutting down 41 in the third quarter alone and 148 over the past year. The bank is the second largest by deposits after J.P. Morgan and ranked third in branches as of June 30th of 5,000 branches. One thing also, when you shut down these branches, certainly you could have a quicker transfer of funds unless the internet goes down. But if your branch closes, I guess you can't go there and withdraw your money either.
Well, that would be one. You won't see a bank run in the sense of people lining up trying to get their money from the tellers. That's less and less probable, but you may see an invisible bank run that takes place on the internet. It won't
be
visible, but it nevertheless, I agree.
I think you'll see both.
But before we do, we're going to see some commercials. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-418. What's the last number, Melody?
You know.
Maybe I do and maybe I don't. It's 8.
I think you do.
4188. All right.
I get a little touchy when someone messes with my telephone numbers, Al. 1-800-375-418.
I think I was Verizon or something like that.
You would think. We have a question in from Murray. He says, what do you make of this report about ISIS coming out with their own gold, silver, and copper coins? What will the U.S. government's response be? Perhaps capital controls like that with currencies and drug dealers? Nothing happens by accident.
Well, Ron Paul wrote an article just lately, last week, that described that referenced what he described as the world's unbelievable trust. That was his phrase, unbelievable trust in the fiat dollar. And what he tried to illustrate is that the world has an incredible level of trust in the dollar. It's irrational. It doesn't make sense, but they do have it. And so long as they have that level of trust, the dollar will continue to function. And what he's saying by implication is that a fiat currency is ultimately based on, and this wasn't, these weren't his words. This is the way I read it, though, and the way I understand it after thinking about it a little bit. What he's saying is that a fiat currency is ultimately the product of a very strong nation, a strong government, a strong economy, a cohesive people. Right? And insofar as we can all function together and we are productive and we have a valid government and one thing or another like that, the nation is strong, then people are prepared. The people within the country are prepared and people in foreign countries are prepared. All right, we'll take your IOUs. That is to say our fiat currency. But when you have a weak nation, if they want to get in the game, it's just like a subprime borrower trying to get money out of the banks, borrow money from the banks. In theory, if you don't have a decent credit rating, you've got to come up with some collateral. We're not just going to let you come in there and sign your name on the papers. Well, I'd like to borrow $250,000. I don't actually have a job, but I'd still like to borrow $250,000. Well, you better put up some money then. Understand? We're going to need $50,000 or $100,000 out of your pocket before we're willing to lend you the balance. The same thing is true on a national or political level. If you're a weak entity, we're not inclined to take your fiat currency. You're not going to be likely to issue your own fiat currency. You've got to be strong to issue a fiat currency. ISIS is not strong. ISIS is not an established entity, doesn't have an established government, doesn't have, you know, they're flexible. They may all be dead from bombings in the next 2-3 years. Who knows? So if they're going to do any business, because nobody trusts them, they're going to want that gold and silver. That's the way I'm looking at that. This is the implication to my mind. And it tells us there's a lot to be learned from this line of conjecture. I'm not telling you it's God's truth. I'm just telling you this is the way it appears to me. It implies that if and when the public loses confidence in the dollar, we fail to trust the dollar, it's at that point that the dollar dies. It's held together by public trust. And we can begin to ask ourselves, well, what would cause us to lose trust in the dollar? And I suspect that the answer is a default. If and when the government is forced to admit that it can't pay its bills, and it really hasn't been paying its bills since at least 1971 when it went off the gold standard. We've been discharging our debt with fiat currency. We've been getting away with it. We are insolvent. We are the emperor who has no clothes. But it doesn't matter as long as people continue to trust the dollar. I suspect that the event that would sap that trust would be a moment when the government has to admit, gee, we're sorry, but we can't make that pension payment. We can't pay on those bonds. We are going to default on some of our loans or some of our financial obligations. And if and when they have to make that open admission, at that point in time, the American people and the world will say, we don't trust the fiat dollar anymore. It will die, and people will be in a distrusted nation, a distrusted economy. We will go running and screaming back for gold and silver. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking just superficially, just roll this. In fact, this whole idea that we're talking about right now just crossed my mind a couple hours ago. Right. It's not, you know, it's one of those notions that are kind of half baked at the moment. I haven't really had it in the oven long enough where I have come to a conclusion. I say this really does impress me as true, but for the moment rings my bell. So does that make any sense, Melody? That ISIS is weak, therefore they're not trusted, therefore they have to use gold. The fiat currency is a function of enormous trust, but part of the problem is that inevitably, once some nation is so strong that it can establish a fiat currency, that nation inevitably abuses the trust that underlies the establishment of a fiat currency. They eventually do things that are so stupid, so irrational, so greedy, so criminal, so treasonous, and eventually people say, you know, I don't think we can trust that fiat currency anymore. And when that happens, the trust removes, the fiat currency disappears. Gold is something we trust. I trust gold. I don't trust the guy. I don't trust the guy who's given me a paper IOU. I do trust gold. And so does the world. And when the guy who's handing out paper IOUs, when they finally say, we don't trust you anymore, everybody runs to gold and silver. And that's the way I'm inclined to look at it. And I think that describes our time to some extent.
Well, I think it's a good comparison, you know, to our times. And certainly the lack of belief in the fiat dollar, the trust, the confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the American people, they're going to hold on to that U.S. dollar till the very end, because I don't believe they even understand. But the world will lose that confidence first, and the U.S. citizen, the majority of them, will still be holding that dollar until it is totally worthless, because they have been conditioned time after time after time to think that their government is going to take care of them.
That's exactly
right. And the government has taken care of them, but until it comes down to their monetary policy, the U.S. dollar and so forth, the government will no longer take care of them. And these people in this country will be holding on to their dollar bills until the very end. And the rest
and
of the world.
We've seen examples of it. This isn't just, I mean, when we saw the Weimar Republic.
The American people aren't the ones that will lose confidence first to make the dollar
they make the last
They'll be the last ones to go. But my question about the story of ISIS is not so much of the fiat currency, how it's recognized and how people will turn to gold. My question is, why is this even getting any credible coverage from the news report? I mean, here you have an entity presented as thugs, that is, they're terrorists, but yet, you know, they're little story, perhaps trying to create its own currency, is, you know, headline news in some of these mainstream media newspapers. So my question is, why?
Because you've got to feed the media goat. That was a term, I think it was Norman Mailer used, maybe back in the 70s or the 80s, something like that. And what he was trying to say, look, you know, I mean, the media, if you're going to sell newspapers, for example, you got to have something in it. Huh? You got to do something. It means you got stories today, you got stories tomorrow, you got stories the day after that. You got to find more, which means you necessarily, anything that's interesting, if it looks like it'll fly, we're going to publish it.
Because most of the talk about them buying gold, using gold, is, oh, they talked about how, oh, the ISIS will run out of gold to finance its activities, and then they're going to have to start lowering the metal content and the coins. And we've seen this in history. You cannot have a viable government or monetary system backed with gold, with gold coins. So therefore, it's not going to work. And, you know, you can see all ways that
I think it
can
will
be presented.
Work. Provided that they can maintain their supply of gold.
Exactly.
I guarantee you, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Genghis Khan or Adolf Hitler. If you've got gold, there are people who will be happy to do business with you.
But
at the point in time when you say, would you take a check? Then they say, Genghis, buzz off. We don't need you.
The big question is, would they run out of gold?
Yeah. The question is, where are they getting gold in the first place?
Yeah.
There's the question.
Yep.
All right, there is the question. Somebody is supplying them with gold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who is it? There's the question. Saudi Arabia? Who? Somebody's getting gold from someplace. How do you have a revolutionary group of, you know, people that are involved in a revolutionary movement? Where do they get access to gold? And when they do, what makes them say, well, we'll conduct our affairs in gold? Someone is subsidizing them, and not even with fiat currency. They're subsidizing them with gold.
Mm-hmm.
And this all by itself is kind of an interesting point, because if ISIS can, to the extent that they can function with gold,
they'll grow.
All of a sudden, they take on a level of credibility mm-hmm. that they haven't had in the past. On the one hand, without gold, they're just a bunch of ragtag revolutionaries down, running through the desert shooting at people. With gold, all of a sudden people, wait a second. Yeah, well, yeah, I know they're ISIS, but there are a bunch of people that are sitting back, well, yeah, but they're willing to pay gold. Let's do some business.
Yep. Here's some bigger equipment for you.
Yeah. So it's interesting, lessons to be learned. Point is, if you folks think we're going into a time when we can't trust the fiat dollar, then to the extent that's true, you want to get into something you can trust, that everybody trusts, and that'll be gold or silver. Because it's not an IOU. It's a payment. Got a gold coin in your hand? You have been paid. Got a piece of paper in your hand? You have only a promise to pay. You have an IOU, but you haven't been paid yet.
And their question came in from Murray, the same person who asked those questions about ISIS. There's no way ISIS can stay financially viable without some government sanctioning them. Why isn't the U.S. shutting down their bank accounts?
Well, we're busy working on Russia right now. We don't have time for ISIS. We can bomb them, sure, but and they actually real economic sanctions. We're not going to get into that because why not? You know, it's really an excellent question from Murray. Why aren't we imposing economic sanctions on ISIS? How can a band of revolutionaries
run
through the jungle or through the desert establish themselves financially in the world?
How can you impose sanctions when they're not a entity?
But if they're
just a bunch of thugs.
But they're not just a bunch of thugs.
That's what you said. My point is there's no...
If they're dealing in gold, they're not a
bunch
of
thugs. There's nothing to put sanctions
on. If they are selling, capturing crude oil from some of the territories that they've allegedly conquered, and they're selling the crude oil, they're more than a bunch of thugs. They've taken on they are like the mafia who wants to become legitimate businessmen. It may be that they started out as a bunch of crooks, but now they wanted, they want a pension plan and MasterCard and Visa and an opportunity to visit the Riviera. I'm exaggerating, but you get my point. They want to be legitimate.
Where are they going to do all this from?
I don't know, Melody. A lot of this stuff is crazy. I get that. And you ask me for reason in a world where reason doesn't seem to clearly apply anymore. Special interests are supporting ISIS. And it's unclear who those interests are. I saw an article just lately. They alleged that one of America's generals was ultimately, you look back into the history of it, he was ultimately responsible for the creation. And I can't think which one it was. His name is Petraeus. I believe it was Petraeus.
Yeah.
And they were saying that he was ultimately instrumental in establishing ISIS. Now, it would be one of those things where he started talking to some guys in a tent out in the middle of Syria or someplace, and he said, we'll give you some money if you'll do this, that, and the other. And they said, okay. All right, they went along. So in theory, maybe Petraeus helped establish this. I won't argue that it was his intent to do so. It might have just been his stupidity, right, or just short-sightedness. And he said, well, let's get these guys. Well, they funded some thugs, and the thugs now have turned into something that they are now robbing us, not just robbing. They'll rob anybody. They really are thugs. Where's the rationale? Where's the reason? I don't know. Some of this stuff is just, and it's crazy to a point where you wonder, is it just crazy, or is it evidence that circumstances are so desperate that people in positions of power are grabbing at any straw? They are literally grabbing at straws, hoping to survive whatever flood they're dealing with right now. I mean, are we just dealing with stupidity? Are we just dealing with irrationality? Or are we dealing with desperation? Is that what's driving us right now? And if we are, what is the proper course of action for people who say, I think this system might be desperate right now? And if it is, that has to mean that the risk of some sort of a collapse, catastrophe, whatever, is increased. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it means that the probability is increased. In the face of that increased risk, what is a sensible course of action? How do you protect yourself against a government that has become desperate? And the answer may be to get some gold, get some silver, and get ready to hang on tight because we are headed for a very bumpy ride. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom, Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
James from West Virginia.
Oh, James.
Oh, you fellas raise the issue of who is funding their wherewithal for the gold. History repeats. A couple
the
centuries ago, you call the colonists. I read this in a book in the 70s. Boy, I wish I could remember all the books I've read. My biggest problem is I keep 12 of them going at the same time. Anyway, they said that the colonialists would bleed the local economy in the third world country to the point where the natives got restless. And it was at that time there are two important words they would find and fund a man of the people to lead the regime change, and they would compromise with the natives and put a different governor general, whatever, and the previous regime would go back to Europe and live a life of luxury. I remember communist revolutions, this, that, and the other, in the Central and Latin America. I didn't know this at the time. It'll turn out later. From my dad, as my mother was dying, he spilled his guts. But a guy from the State Department, we had photographs of a pallet of Federal Reserve notes, worn-out Federal Reserve notes, slated for destruction, which were unloaded and funneled through the State Department to the communist insurgents. Now, on the mainstream media, we kept hearing with, all these communists had robbed banks. And that's how they're getting the money, to overthrow the government. Okay, we've heard stories of C-130s plumb full of Federal Reserve notes going out to the Middle East. Now, I wonder where ISIS is getting the wherewithal to buy gold.
Mm-hmm.
Can you figure it out, Einstein?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You're
going
to have to probably call.
The answer.
Does anyone have a Ph.D.? Maybe they could figure it out for us.
Mm. Well, if you can balance a checkbook, you ought to be able to figure it out. It's that simple, folks.
Yep.
Okay, I've contributed my 2 cents worth. Keep shoveling the truth out there. Sooner or later, it's got to catch hold. I spent a little time with a family member, one of Diane's children's wives, and blew her mind wide open last night. She asked a simple question about the Communist Manifesto, and that you never know what the... You never know what
she's learned a valuable lesson there, hasn't she? Don't ask a question if you don't know the answer to it. This is something lawyers know all the time, but ordinary people, they don't necessarily know that.
Well, I tell you what, I've been trying to wake them up for several years, but you never know what's going to hook them. You never
know
it's going to be the vaccines or the economics or something. But she was going to school and was asking questions. But once you get hooked into the truth, you stay with it. Now, you guys keep shoveling it out there. Keep throwing the mud on the wall. Just keep it up, because the key to education is repetition. Now, okay, I'll let the Einsteins figure out where ISIS is getting their wherewithal. Catch you later.
Thank
you. All right. Thank you, Jim.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Well, Melody, what's next?
Well, I just have a little article here about, I thought this was interesting, that Obama issued a memorandum immunizing federal contractors hired to address the Ebola outbreak in West Africa against lawsuits for importing Ebola into the United States.
That's insane. You know that?
It is.
That is as insane as issuing some sort of an immunity for bank robbers who rob from banks and they bring the money into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Look, if you're a crook, you're a crook. If you are diseased, you are diseased. If you are helping to move a disease into this country that might cause, I mean, why would he grant that immunity unless they understand very clearly
that it's
that
common.
Just might get out of control, that the Ebola might get out of control and might infect everybody in this country or a lot of people in this country, and therefore we can't have people being held responsible for doing something that anybody with an IQ over 90 can see is stupid, if not treasonous. And he's, oh, we're going to give them immunity. Why? Do I get immunity if I go out and cause some damage to people? If I shoot them, if I cause disease among the people, do I mind? No, of course not. Well, but a major corporation, that's different. We've got to give the corporations immunity. Bunk. They want the same rights as people. And they've had decisions from the Supreme Court that essentially grant them similar rights, but they don't want the same responsibility. I can be responsible. Melody can be responsible. All of you people listening can be held accountable and responsible for what you do. But we've got to give a special deal for the corporations. It should be exactly opposite. If anybody's going to get any immunity, it should be the people. If anyone's going to be held ultimately liable every single time, should be the corporations. What's next, Melody?
Oh, you had something there about the Keystone. The Keystone pipeline was sent
to. It was just interesting.
Senate.
There was an article yesterday from CNBC, and the headline was "Economics No Longer Makes Keystone Pipeline Viable." All right, CNBC. As Congress rushes to approve the long-delayed Keystone XL pipeline, it is questionable whether or not the project will make as much of a difference as proponents expect. Since June, crude oil has declined, the price of crude oil has declined by 28%, pushing the price that oil from new wells from Canada may command below what the expected cost will be to produce it. All right? Now, the Keystone Pipeline is supposed to take crude oil from Canada and ship it into the United States. It'll ultimately be refined and perhaps even exported. There's some questions about that. But regardless, who's going to fill the Keystone Pipeline with crude oil if the price of crude oil is below the cost of producing the crude oil? I mean, we can use the Keystone Pipeline for some sort of a facility, perhaps, for kids to skateboard. All right? We can enter doors at different points, but we aren't going to put any crude oil in given the current prices of crude oil. That's the point. They go on and they said the heavy oil extracted from sand in Alberta will cost between $85 and $110 to produce, but it traded off yesterday. The price was $76.67 per barrel. They're losing money right now. Anything to go on, and Deanne Denaro Milligan, Vice President of Research, Calgary-based operation, said anything not under construction is at risk of being delayed or canceled altogether because it doesn't make economic sense. That's yesterday, CNBC. Today, Washington Times reports, headline, House approves Keystone Pipeline, setting up final Senate showdown. House of Representatives, in their first major vote since last week's election, easily passed a bill to approve the Keystone Pipeline that would bring crude oil from Canada to the United States. Sending the bill over to the Senate, which will have a major showdown Tuesday. Tuesday they'll have a debate. I don't know when they're going to have a vote. Vote counters say the pipeline supporters in the Senate are just about at the 60 votes needed to pass the Senate under the rules of debate that have been established by Senator Mary Landrieu and blah, blah, blah. There's political complications here that are interesting. But the point in all of this is the Keystone Pipeline, first point, has only passed the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. It has not yet passed the Democrat-controlled Senate, and it will remain Democrat-controlled until the end of this year, another 6 weeks or whatever, 7 weeks, something like that. Whether it's going to pass the Senate before the end of this year is unclear. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. If it does pass the Senate this year, or even after the new Senate takes their seats, assumes office starting in January of next year, and becomes Republican-controlled, if the Keystone Pipeline is passed, is this bill evidence of Republican determination, perhaps even stupid determination, to pass the bill even if it does not make economic sense at the current low prices of crude oil? I mean, the Republicans say, are they as nutty as Obama? Where he says, I'm going to pass the immigration bill. I don't care whether you like it or you don't like it. I'm going to do it anyway. Now, the Republicans just say, we're going to pass this thing. We're going to do it for the Trans-Canada Corporation. We're going to pass it no matter what. Is that where the Republicans are? Or is the bill evidence that Congress knows that the price of crude oil is about to bounce back up from $75 a barrel to, say, $100 a barrel? Does Congress know that the price of crude oil is coming back up? And if so, by the time the Keystone Pipeline is completed, the money, the economics will make perfect sense. And if so, does that indicate the current low price of crude oil is largely temporary and not likely to last for a significant amount of time? What do you think, Melody? Republicans are just determined to the point of being stupid, or do they know that the price of crude oil is bound to bounce back up?
Both.
Yeah, both. Okay, both. Yeah. You should change
your...
Change your name, Melody.
I mean, we certainly know crude oil prices are going to go higher. They're not going to remain at these levels for long. Right. So they are going to go back up. They'll probably average out to $90, and they'll fluctuate based on any type of geopolitical circumstance around the world. You know, you'll see it bop up over 100, but high oil prices are here to stay. They're not going away. And then you have to ask yourself, well, you know, how strong are these lobbyists for this? You know, again, you talk about, you know, they're all bought and paid for. So a lot of this is they're probably in there doing what they're paid to do.
I agree.
Is try to get this paid. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, Obama can still veto it. And the Keystone Pipeline was done in different phases. This is the last phase to be completed, and it's a small section of the whole pipeline going through Nebraska because of some, they were disturbing the land and so forth, some of the resources and everything, and even TransCanada Corporation, they ended up changing the direction of the pipeline to avoid it, and it's supposed to be going through the courts to, you know, get is approved because they did the new route was approved by the governor of Nebraska. So, I mean, this is all, you know, Obama keeping vetoing it. And how many can say Warren Buffett? Warren Buffett transports a lot of that oil. And, he's been a big friend to, you know, Wall Street and he was there to bail out Bank of America. It wasn't the government that bailed out Bank. It was Warren Buffett, and gave him billions of dollars. So, he plays a big part, too. So it's politics as usual.
And that's the shame of it, because it's not about the general welfare of the American people. This bill will probably take place based on the financial welfare of a tiny minority of special interests. Who's really going to benefit from this? The American people? A tiny minority? Who's going to benefit? And the government, it may be that the average person will get some benefit out of this. I won't argue that's not going to happen. But if they do, it will be a derivative benefit. It's not primary intent. It's let's make a deal. You know? And that's what they're trying to do, trying to make them an offer that they can't refuse.
Yeah, so, you know, it's all business and politics. And, you know, with the price of oil this low, you know, yeah, maybe it doesn't make business sense today. But, you know, it's going higher. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's always the case with this. Here's another long, similar argument. This is from SRS Rocco. They deal with precious metals. And the headline is Primary Silver Miners Losing Nearly $3 for Every Ounce of Production. And the article says, in part, with more than half of the primary silver miners, meaning mining companies, financial results for the first quarter finally out, the group is now losing nearly $3 an ounce at the current market price of silver. We can thank the Federal Reserve and bullion banks for rigging paper silver price well below the estimated average break-even for the primary silver mining companies. How long can that last? How long can silver miners lose $3 an ounce before they shut the door and the supply dries up and the price has to go up?
Hey, miners have shut their doors before.
Well, I understand.
And, you know, it didn't affect the prices. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I believe in silver, and I believe silver prices are going to go higher. And I do believe, you know, this is important to know that, you know, where this is, you know, how they, you know, the cost of the mining and so forth. But so many people put stock that that's the one thing that's going to push the price of silver up. I think the fundamentals are far stronger than, you know, the mining of $3. Below the, you know, what it takes to bring silver out. Silver, and it's difficult with silver because silver is a byproduct. Silver is a byproduct of zinc, of nickel. So it's difficult. But silver mines close before they reopen. You know, and how many of them hedge themselves? They should be hedging themselves with the price going down. So, you know, there's a lot of things in the background that a lot of these folks don't talk about. But certainly it does put a major impact. I mean, the miners have been hit, and they've been hit hard, both gold and silver. And I do expect to see have them turn around also. And, you know, they might even, you know, I mean, they've been so
devastated. It just has to happen. It's just that's the only point of the report. There's all kinds of crazy things going on. No one can continue to produce silver at a $3 per ounce loss. It can't happen. That means supply is going to dry up. Price is going to go up. People who invest in silver now are going to do well. People who invest in gold now are going to do well. Reason and rationality will intrude whether the existing system wants it or not. And so will commercials and the end of programs. And Melody and I are out of time for this week. And this day, we'll be back on Monday. I want to thank all of you for listening, and have a good weekend. And in the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money. Money, 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 always sunny.